Drogo, the Carl's brother. Well, you know, he was always more of the athletic one. I'm more of what you might call a numbers guy. Yeah, sure, every little boy grows up wanting to be a blood writer. Somebody's got to hold the abacus. You know what wins battles? Provisioning. I mean, you take a purebred stallion like the Carl's got. What am I going to do with that? I got a very nice deal on this mare here. She's not the fanciest horse, but she's safe. The new Khaleesi, I have to admit, I was a little bit skeptical in the beginning. I said, Carl, she's far younger than you. She comes from a different world. But I have to hand it to her. She's really taken an interest in the culture.
TBTL!
It's the first line of the film, man. It's got to be on the money here.
Brother, who are you? What are you doing? I'm with the news, dude.
Don't speak. No, 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 go.
Just what?
Don't speak.
Oh, they say winter's coming, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
If only we were trapped in a castle in the middle of winter with nowhere to go.
It's sort of the podcast equivalent of that. You will feel trapped, let me tell you that. My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
There's a Hidden Valley Ranch party in my mouth.
I am coming to you from my version of the Red Keep. Burbank Springs, the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, looking out over Lake Whatcom and Stewart Mountain and Squalicum Mountain and the gray skies and a little bit of rain. It's the last day for a while that there won't be people climbing around on the roof of Burbank Springs right above where I am broadcasting from. We're getting a new roof put on this week, and starting tomorrow they're going to be taking the old roof off, which is a whole crazy thing because it's this like weird tile that weighs like a million pounds. So that's going to be happening, and then they're going to be putting the new roof on, and all the while I'll be down here trying to make imaginary radio for you. So enjoy this relative... So, I mean, the irony of me saying this is the Red Keep, and the Red Keep is on Game of Thrones was completely destroyed. And like that, the Burbank Springs will have to go through a period of being mildly destroyed before it can be rebuilt. So anyway, let's see. What are we going to talk about here on episode 2904 in a collector's series?
Let the fun begin.
Well, I'm not just going to be dealing with some major structural reimagination here at the house this week, but I'm also, of course, along with my buddy Andrew, getting ready for our big trip to Australia. It happens starting this Friday. There is so much for us to still figure out before Friday. I think we're doing okay, though.
Oh, my God, I'm freaking out!
Okay, kind of. Actually, we're freaking out a little bit. We'll talk about it. I have figured out what my outfit plan is going to be. You know, I like to wear a uniform. And so for like a trip like this, it was important to me. Well, one of the most important things, along with figuring out how to actually get the show recorded and put out to all of you, which is, I guess you could say, maybe the most important concern, only slightly less important for me, is to figure out what I'm going to wear every day. Cause I don't want to be having to like get up in the morning in the outback and make hard decisions. And I've figured out what my uniform is going to be. We can talk about that. Plus, Game of Thrones. Whether or not you are a Game of Thrones watcher, you must now know that the show finally reached its conclusion last night. The series finale occurred. And we have a whole special add-on to TBTL called A Song of Ice and Spoilers that we record. And we will be recording that later today. That's very about the plot. Well, in as much as we can remember the plot or any of the names of the characters, that's what that show is about. But the cultural impact of Game of Thrones goes well beyond people who watch the show, and so we're going to talk about that today, coming up a little bit, the fact that this thing is finally done, which is kind of good news for people that don't care about the show, because now you can stop hearing about a thing that you don't care about. Anyway, so we'll get into that too, with the help of this guy, the longest running co-brogan of the show, known for his drawings of the Iron Fleet as they sail. Oh, by the way, I stopped myself right there. Because while we're as we're talking about the culture around Game of Thrones, we'll try to not spoil it for you. But I just found myself, even in this dingus made up intro for Andrew, I just found myself also almost spoiling things. So let's just get him on the show. He's Andrew Walsh. You know him as...
This guy is a 4.5 foot tall pile of awesomeness.
He is joining us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. Garbage bins are emptied. They're back. They're behind their little cage. Everything is good over here.
Sweet.
What's going on with you, though?
No spoilers.
I was all prepared for you to be working underneath a canopy of hammers banging and saws sawing today. Not yet, though,
yeah.
Huh?
No, let's start this show out at the really with our finger on the pulse of what's relevant to a nation of people, and that is the timing of Nolan's roofing of Ferndale, Washington, and how they do their jobs. Yeah, like it's a thing where they got to finish one project before they start the next one, and so I guess the project they were doing last week ended up taking a little longer than they thought. So instead of being here this morning, they are going to be here starting tomorrow morning, which truthfully is kind of a relief because we've got this episode to record. We've got the Game of Thrones special to record. There's going to be a lot going on. And when the folks show up to do the roof, I kind of need to be like, I think I should be wearing pants, number one. And number two, I should be able to go out there and talk to them and kind of work out the details because they're bringing a giant, like, dumpster. And they're going to put it in our kind of side yard / the driveway to get to the house behind us.
Now you're talking.
Because they got to take all this.
Love
it. Gotta, right? They got to take all of the existing roofing material off. And the thing that makes that a little dicey is that we have this like sunroom on the side of the house. And it's old. It's from the 50s. The whole house is from the 50s. And it's probably a little delicate, a little fragile. And it's also directly beneath. Like they're going to be throwing all of the old roofing material over the sunroom into the dumpster. Like the dumpster is going to be snugged up next to a giant glass, like angled wall, basically. And they're going to be throwing literally tons and tons of roofing material over that. So we have to figure out a system. They have to figure out some way to protect that. And so anyway, they're coming out this afternoon, and I'm going to like, I guess, I don't know, we're going to try to come up with a plan for that. So that all has to happen. It's going to be, I don't know, like a little bit of a thing. And so I'm glad that it's happening tomorrow is what I am trying to say to you. Plus, I'm a little, you know, I said on Friday's show that I was in a bit of a fugue state because I just have been having a very busy end of last week. And then this weekend, I had two different events that I was hosting. And the one on Saturday night I was a little nervous about because it had a high level of ambition. I do think there was at least 110 there because somebody tweeted at me a picture of the kind of video package around this thing. Saturday night I was doing an event for Bloodworks Northwest, which is the blood bank. And they made like a fake Tonight Show starring me. And it was called like Bloodworks Tonight with Luke Burbank. I even had a desk, Andrew. I had a special like. At the desk with the show's sign on the desk and my name on the sign. It was like there was a house band. There was an announcer. They really went all out. But I was doing this opening monologue, which was like it was written jokes. I had it on a teleprompter. That's a whole kind of a trip. I've never done that before. Like I've used a teleprompter when I'm doing stuff for CBS where I'm just sitting in a room on a chair looking and I'm basically reading this thing and it's on the camera actually. You're looking into the lens of the camera, but the words are moving across. There's some complex system of one-way mirrors. Mm-hmm. Is that a one-way mirror or a two-way mirror? If the camera can see through it, but then when I look at it, I'm seeing a mirror. Is that one-way or two ways?
That's a really good question. I'm not the right person to answer it.
It feels like a one-way mirror because I'm seeing a mirror, but the camera's not seeing a mirror. So a two-way mirror would be something that's mirrored on both sides.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. Does that mean if I just go into the bathroom right now and look at myself in the mirror, am I looking in a one-way mirror? Should I start calling it a one-way mirror?
I would assume so, unless the back of it is a mirror.
Oh. Somebody is looking at me through my bathroom mirror? Is that my takeaway?
I'm just saying cover it just to be safe.
Okay, no, that's fair. Thank
Welcome
you.
To InfoWars.
I appreciate the heads up. Woo.
Watch out for dog men. So I think people often say a two-way mirror when they're talking about that kind of classic crime procedural,
sure,
where the person's being interviewed in the room and they're watching the person, but the person can't see them or whatever. I mean that really should be called a one-way mirror. Anyway, I'm used to using a teleprompter in a certain kind of way, but not this way, which is I'm standing on stage and I'm talking to people and I'm trying to be casual, but I'm also trying to deliver sort of precisely written jokes, and they're being scrolled on this big screen that's like down at the kind of foot of the stage. And I realized midway through, I was like, I don't really know how to do this. I hope that this goes okay, because there's like, I don't know, 1,000 people in this room. I'm trying to keep them entertained. But part of it was that this organization was turning 75 years old. And so we were – one of the things was about, like, you know, other things that started 75 years ago or happened 75 years ago. And one thing was talking about the scientists had figured out how to – like how DNA worked. That was a thing that happened 75 years ago. And another little fact I mentioned was the Boeing company 75 years ago, they were making 362 airplanes a month.
Whoa.
That was – yeah, right? Which is crazy to me. And – I'm just talking. I'm saying this, and I say jokingly, I mean, they weren't good airplanes because, you know.
Oh, so nothing's changed.
That's why they pay me. That's why they pay me the big bucks, Andrew, because I'm a hilarious improviser in that way. So that was not the line. That was not supposed to be the joke. But I just thought, man, to make 362 airplanes in a month, that's like you're really, really cranking out the airplanes. I mean, what's the QC on that? What's the quality control? Well, I make this joke, and as I'm in the middle of making it, a little still small voice in the back of my head reminds mm-hmm. me that they mentioned that one of the main sponsors of the event and one of the biggest donors and one of the biggest tables is Boeing.
Who's currently Boeing going through a huge once in a company's lifetime, hopefully, crisis over the quality of their airplanes and the information that they're giving the pilots regarding said airplanes. How'd that go?
Yes. That was a really succinct and good catch 'em up
yeah.
for the people that aren't in on this. I mean that.
Yeah.
And my brain's doing that. Like, imagine everything you just said. And you said it really quickly. You said it in probably under 5 seconds. My brain said that to me in under 5/50ths of a uh-huh. second in the middle of the joke. But the joke was already out of my mouth about saying they weren't good airplanes to the company no. that's literally at a crisis point about the quality of one of their airplanes. And I was just like, oh, man, what are you doing? I was just like, peace and love, Boeing. Just messing with you. And it was like, hopefully they think that's, you know, part of the shtick or something. I don't know.
What
I literally may have actually thrown out a – I think I threw out a peace sign. I don't know. It was hard to tell. I'll tell you this. There wasn't like a horrified sound that went through the room, partially because at these events, people are kind
of
eating and talking and drinking,
sure,
too.
Yeah. A lot of tinkling.
There's sort of a general – yeah, there's like a general din mm-hmm. going on. So it's just like – and I think I did the right thing, which was I just pushed through. I didn't mm-hmm. like – I didn't belabor it. I just was like, it is what it is. It wasn't meant to be, you know, and I just kind of moved on. And then afterwards, I actually didn't – it's weird. I didn't dwell on it as much as you would imagine with the way that I tend to ruminate on some things. I just was kind of like, all right. So I actually kind of forgot about it. And then at the end of the night – oh, by the way, there's just one other moment where we did this bit – where we brought some guy up on stage and he had to reach into this box. He couldn't see what was in the box and he had to feel things and then guess what they were. And the final thing was a bowl of canned peaches. So it was like a couple of cans of peaches opened up and dumped into a big bowl. And it really paid off because I guess the sensation of reaching – when you don't know what you're touching, reaching in and feeling a cold bowl of canned peaches, like his reaction was strong. Like it feels weird.
I broke out in crying doing that when I was a kid, I remember. It was at a Halloween
really?
Party in school. I'm still embarrassed about it. I don't know. I think I was the first one
really...
to stick my hands into the thing, and then like I stuck. You can just picture it, right? Like I'm probably in, yeah. I don't know, older than I should be, but I don't know, let's say first, second grade or something like that. I don't know. And I stick my hand into, like, oh, it's a fun Halloween game. Andrew, you go first. I'm already the kid that always gets made fun of everything, and then I stick my hands into something, and it scares me, and I think that the adults are really making me stick my hands into spiders or something, and I start crying. Did not get a
Andrew.
Date that day.
How funny that, like, around the same time, I'm being allowed to go on my first ever and last ever Halloween trick-or-treating mm-hmm. incident, and I go out, and the first, like probably the first house is a woman dressed as a witch, as people have heard this story many times, including during our Halloween special. And me being sheltered, I didn't realize she wasn't actually a witch, and I freaked out. You and I don't have a great Halloween history.
We really don't. Yet here we are doing shows about Halloween years later.
Yes. So I get so one thing that happened was he feels the peaches. He guesses what they were. We play him off the stage. And I go sit back at my desk, and I bring the bowl of peaches with me just to be funny in the moment. I'm ad-libbing now, Andrew. I'm just in the moment. I'm winging them Robin Williams style. And I say, we got to take a quick break. I'll just be here eating these peaches if you need me. And then the band plays, and we go to a break because it was like a fake TV show. And I'm just sitting there eating the peaches as they're going to break to be funny. Like, were I Jimmy Fallon, this would be, you know, you can imagine the scene. Just a guy sitting on stage. He's eating the peaches out of the bowl. There's a lot of peaches in there. But what I realize is, people are still watching me to see how many of these peaches I'm going to eat. Now we're like not in the show anymore. We're like in the break. People are just supposed to be eating their normal dinner. And there's one table watching me eat the peaches. And I just keep eating the peaches to make them laugh. And then it's like only one person at the table is even paying attention. Just this lady is just looking at me like, is he going to keep doing this? And now I'm like 1.5 cans deep into this. And only at this point to make one person laugh, Andrew. And I realize at this point, oh, yeah. This guy named Ivan from King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, who was the person we called onto stage, Ivan's grubby mitts were all in these peaches.
Do you have any idea how many times I see men leave the restroom without washing their hands? Is this a good time to mention that or bad?
No, it's a terrible time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll save it for the Game of Thrones podcast.
I pray to God, Ivan. I didn't even think – you know, honestly, I didn't even consider that. I mean, it is what it is at this point. But I'm at some point I'm eating – I've eaten now, I'm going to say 15 slices of peach, which each one is probably maybe an eighth of a peach.
Mm-hmm.
I've eaten at least two full peaches, if not more, that have been soaking in super sugary water to make one person in the room laugh. And I'm thinking, well, I guess I got to finish this bowl. People are coming over to me. The announcer's like, you're still doing this? He's like, we call that commitment to the bit. Mm-hmm. This is not for the audience. He's just saying it to me like as we're standing on stage or I'm sitting. And then I realize, oh, you know what? This is exactly the kind of thing that makes like kids throw up after birthday mm-hmm. parties. Like massive consumption of some weird processed food like this. Like my dad tells a story of how when he was a kid, he really loved green olives. And like he'd be, you know, if they'd have dinner or his parents would be having cocktails or something, and he would like eat green olives. And he always, so when he finally started getting some money, he got his allowance or something. He bought himself a jar of green olives. He ate all of the olives and then he drank the juice.
Mm.
And then he was violently ill. He's vomiting green olive stuff everywhere. And I was just like, oh, I need to stop this right now or I'm going to be upchucking peaches when we come back from the break.
How was your stomach feeling at this point? Were you getting rumbles?
It felt great at the moment, and I was on a sugar high. That's more sugar than I've had in a long time in one sitting. But then I think I stopped that one just in time. Anyway, the show wrapped up. I was fine. I didn't throw up. I did come back and eat more of the peaches. I eventually got through the entire bowl of peaches by the end of the show. It became comedically a crutch for me as the – anyone who's interacted with my work will know if I find something is moderately working, I will run it into the ground pretty quick. So I did that. Anyway, I get done and I get off stage and the staff of the organization and the people who set this whole thing up are like really nice. Hey, this is great. I was like, yeah, sorry about that Boeing joke. And they were like, yeah, yeah. We were like, okay. This is the kind of thing that's happened to me before where I reference something and my hope is that the answer is going to be, oh, yeah, no problem.
What Boeing joke?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they noticed it. But everybody was cool about it. They didn't get any pushback. Anyway, cut to Sunday night, and I'm doing this event for Fred Hutch in Seattle, the Fred Hutch Cancer Research Center. Amazing organization in Seattle, really and truly. And, of course, I got to make some Game of Thrones jokes because it's Sunday night and people are at this thing that I'm at instead of being home watching Game of Thrones. And I said something like I go, you know, this is an amazing group of people here. You're here supporting Fred Hutch instead of home disappointed in how Game of Thrones is ending or something, you know, mild laughter. Mm-hmm. And then the first speaker to get up there, he's like a guy, he's like the head of the board of the thing or something. And he's like, well, and he goes, well, Luke stole my Game of Thrones joke. No. So we'll just skip past that. And I realize he has to say that because it's on the teleprompter. He has a Game of Thrones joke written on his teleprompter that he's trying to tell them. You got to just go – like, let's get past that because Luke kind of – so then I'm coming back out, and I have my buddy there, Fred, who's the – I'm kind of co-hosting with him. And I tell him, I got a Game of Thrones joke when I'm going back on stage. And my joke is going to be something about calling this – we're on a teeny tiny little stage, like a comically small stage for two guys to be standing on hosting this event. And I'm going to make a joke. I haven't fully figured out the joke, but it's going to be some joke about like, sorry, I stole your joke, Matt. But you know what? When you try to play the iron podium, you win or you die. So some joke about the podium we're on being the Iron Throne. So I get up there, like even in the best of circumstances, this is a tepid joke. But as I'm starting to deliver it to Fred, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, you play the game of the iron podium. Either you, and then I realize we're at a cancer fundraiser. This is like,
oh my God,
about not dying. This is, and half the people in the room have they've survived cancer or they've lost someone dear to them to cancer. The point of being here is to prolong life and to not die. And me making a joke about dying is gonna just, it's just gonna be the wrong joke to make up here. But I'm 60% of the way into the joke. Thankfully, unlike the Boeing reference, I realize soon enough, and I just. Well, I fall upon my sword, Andrew. I just go like, in the game of the Iron Podium, you play the game or you – I don't know how this ends, Fred. I don't watch the show. Like I just completely – just self-immolated the joke and myself on stage. I guess you can't self-immolate something that's not you. I just burned the whole thing down, not unlike Danny Targaryen, because I was like, better to just look idiotic up here than to continue to finish this joke, which will be tonally really off for the night.
Oh, man. I feel like in both situations, and there's no way you could have thought of this in advance, but like, I don't know if you find yourself in Seattle doing something similar. I think a good backup plan is to always just say, ah, who cares? Seattle's dying. Am I right? And then just see how the crowd responds to that. How about that?
Oh, my God. Oh, man. I wish I could have you there. I wish you could be my master of whispers.
Let me
and just send a little bird to land on my shoulder for moments like that.
Let me ask you one question.
Yes.
This is regarding the quote-unquote stealing of the joke, or not stealing, but, you know, stepping on, because that guy's – you
yes.
At the second event, were you also working off a teleprompter, or you were just being a host and you weren't working off a teleprompter, but the guy you're introducing is – working off a teleprompter? I mean, you couldn't know what's on his
teleprompter,
right?
No.
He was
it was good natured too. He was just ribbing me. He handled it perfectly, actually, I thought, because like he realized in so what they'll do at these events, we found something more boring than roofing.
We can go back to roofing.
Three bells salute.
I actually got more questions about the roof, I'm not even joking. So.
Oh, I got answers. I got answers, my friend. But he handled it really well, because what they do a lot of times is for like, so the thing I did on Saturday night, I was on prompter. I was on the teleprompter because there was so much specific verbiage for me to get through, and it's the hosting of a show. And I didn't want to be looking at a script the whole time, looking down and trying to look up. So that was why that was happening. But generally speaking, what I'm saying is maybe there's bullet points. I usually have a little rundown sheet that just reminds me of what the next thing is, like a piece of paper physically. But I'm not looking at the teleprompter. But they will have the teleprompter available for people who are giving speeches who don't do it a lot and who are a bit nervous potentially about losing their place or whatever. So, yeah, that's why I didn't know what his thing was going to be. And he was – again, he handled it really well, because were he just to deliver the same joke, it would have been kind of flat. But he needed to sort of subtly signal to the guy running the teleprompter that we need to skip past this. So he actually handled it really well. And then I apologized to him offstage, kind of. I was like, sorry to steal your thunder. And he was like, oh, no problem. And then he like fist bumped me, literally, which I assume meant beef squashed.
Oh, did you put beef between your two fists? I believe that's how
I don't
that
do that anymore,
worked.
Andrew. I put an impossible patty. And then we fist bumped.
Oh, you need a new PETA. You need a new PETA approved kind of slang for beef now.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to talk about beef.
Beet.
I guess beets. Exactly. Perfect. Beet squashed. Can I read to
you? Oh, man. We used to have beet, but then we squashed it.
I'm going to read you a sentence that I find to be very, very funny, but it's not a sentence that's funny in any other context except for us reading it right now. It's from Wikipedia. It's on the entry for one-way mirror. A one-way mirror, also called a two-way mirror, is a mirror that is reflected on one side and transparent on the other. So apparently, a one-way mirror and a two-way mirror are the same thing. Anything that you, I guess you just say mirror if you don't want to look through it and spy on somebody.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, the good news is for once we weren't wrong.
Right, yeah.
So let's just let's savor that flavor for a minute while we take this quick break. Then when we come back, we'll talk about Game of Thrones. Not the plot stuff. Don't worry. If you're interested in the plot, that'll be a different show. If you're not interested in the plot, that will also be a different show for you to listen to or not listen to. And then we can kind of update everyone on how our Australia preparation is coming. So that's coming up in a moment on TBTL.
If you can't see my mirrors, I see you coming around, yeah, you're coming around. If you can't see my mirrors, I see you coming around, yeah, you're coming around.
Ah, you know who that is. I mean, this is
it's your buddy.
New pornographers, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Dan Behar, right?
From Destroyer.
That's my Destroyer dude. I'd know his voice anywhere.
It's very distinct. He's usually got lead vocals on one, sometimes two songs on a New Pornographers. I didn't know this was going to be one of his songs, so I hit play on it. Obviously, connection to the mirror talk we were doing earlier. But yeah, as soon as I heard it, I'm like, that's your boy. Now, I can't remember why he's your boy, though. You guys live in the same town? Is that right? Does he live in Bellingham?
No, but I saw him walking down the street in Bellingham. I've had a personal fascination with him since that I read this New Yorker piece years ago about a different guy by the same name, also named Dan Behar or Behar. Who looked like this singer who we just were hearing, who's also in a band called Destroyer. The other Dan Behar is like an artist of some kind and looked enough like him that he grew his beard out and grew his hair out and started doing an art project where he would go around telling people he was the guy from Destroyer. And then the New Yorker ends up following that guy too when Destroyer is playing, I think, on maybe Jimmy Fallon's show or something. So anyway, I had a personal fascination with him. And then one day I was just sitting in my car in Bellingham, literally like pulling out of a parking space. And the dude from Destroyer just walked past me. And I thought, that's surprising. And it's because Nico Case was in town. And Nico Case, he does stuff with her because they're both part of the New Pornographers. So, but I also got really into his record called Kaput, the Destroyer record called Kaput. It's really, really good. It's also listed as the most accessible Destroyer record that's ever been put out. And it's almost like Dan Behar's like putting out something that's kind of jazzy and listenable as some kind of weird high concept art piece, which I'm excited about, which I love, even though he's doing it. The joke might be on me as the listener. I don't know, but I really like it. I would recommend Kaput.
I don't think musicians should be playing jokes on their listeners.
I don't want to read too much into it. He's a very intense, brooding-seeming guy. And so I assume that if I'm liking the music he's making, it's beneath him. It must be like, you know, he must have been like, wouldn't it be an adventure if we made a record that Luke Burbank would listen to? For me, a lot of music is assuming
that Moby did.
I loomed large in the mind of the people making the music.
Right. By the way, I was talking to, it was our buddy Rachel Bell. Of Your Last Meal podcast, among other things. Mm-hmm. And she just had him, Moby, on her show. He's on a book tour right now. So if we want to get Moby on the show, now would be a fertile time.
Didn't you have his info? Weren't you going to reach out to him?
I'll do that later.
Why didn't you text him? Were you just funning me when you said you were going to text him?
No, I think what happened was we said it during the show and then the show ended and I never looked back. I do that a lot.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, I wonder if
that's,
we could.
I'm fine with that. Oh, yeah. That's better than the alternative of you didn't want to do it. You just spaced it, which we do all the time. So in other words, you're not opposed to it in principle.
Also, this is a phone number I have from, you know, years ago, so I don't know if it works. But I'm definitely not opposed to having him on the show in principle. I'm actually wondering, should we bring somebody like him along across Australia with us? For some reason, I'm now in the mode of like maybe the more of us who go across Australia, the better our survival rate will be.
So bring him on the trip. Physically bring Moby
on
the trip.
That's what I was thinking. Our buddy Chris Hayes texted us about something this weekend. I was like, hey, he's like, when are you leaving for Australia? I'm like, you should come with us. And like suddenly I realize I'm just in this mode of just thinking we should just get as big of a crew as possible because if we lose some people along the way, it lessens the chances of us being one of the losses. That doesn't make any scientific sense at all. Screw it.
I don't see this as a thing, though. If we go into the outback with Moby, listen, three men enter, one man leave. Moby's the one that's surviving.
Yeah,
think about him. I don't think he even drinks water. He probably does like a water fast where he fasts from consuming water for weeks at a time. I mean, he's more lizard than man at this point. He is going to thrive in the outback. And we're going to – like he's just going to be walking around in like wearing like – you know, what do you call those? Like what did Gandhi wear? Like, you know, kind of a sort of robes, but kind of loose fitting robes. He's just going to be one with the desert environment, and we're just going to be a mess. So I, honestly, I think we – I don't – anyone else I name, though, this is going to be like I'm going to be besmirching them. But I'm trying to think of who we actually need to bring with us. Like we need to bring – oh, God. Again, I don't want to be hurtful, but we need to bring the opposite of Moby with us, somebody that the wildlife of the outback will seize upon and will not be able to outrun them as we are trying to escape with our lives.
Sorry, I'm just finishing up this text. So I just sent Moby a text saying, will you join us on TBTL? We're a daily podcast. We want to talk to you about your music and the fact that you're a lizard man. Is that good? Okay, good. So that'll probably work then. Okay, good.
You definitely hit send on that.
Yeah, no, that's good. Oh, haven't heard back yet, but I will let you know. I'll keep checking.
Okay, good. How about we do some
choice? Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right. Game of Thrones has reached its finale as a series, and the internet was predictably inflamed over it. Some people very happy with it, some people not happy with how it ended. Again, I've already said this like four times, but this is not the part of the show where we're going to even discuss the plot because that's for a separate thing. But it was a big cultural event. They think when it's all said and done, more than 45 million people will have watched this series finale. Now, by comparison, I was thinking that's like, oh, that's like bigger than the Super Bowl. I guess the Super Bowl gets like 98 million viewing. But if you think about it, you don't have to pay anything to watch the Super Bowl. It's on free television. And you had to like have HBO or know someone who had HBO or know someone had a movie theater where they were playing HBO to see this. So the fact that it's 50 million people found some kind of way to watch this thing that costs money, that's actually pretty impressive.
I only watch it for the commercials, by the way, Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I watch it for the little previews beforehand, little previews afterwards. I don't really pay attention to what's happening in between. So
you're into the Watchmen previews.
Actually,
that's such a high honor, by the way, too. It's like, oh man, you're joking, but I honestly like I slightly geek out on the surrounding assets for a show like this because what I think is, okay, HBO is signaling to us where they're putting the next basket they're putting their eggs into. Because can you imagine being a show that gets to play right before or right after the series finale of Game of Thrones?
Yeah, which – and I'm going to say something – I'm being honest when I say this. I have a feeling that at some point in my life I am going to become a fan of the TV show Ballers. I see the commercials for it, and it doesn't look like it's a show for me at all. Yet I keep on hearing little things here and there about, like, actually Ballers is pretty good. And I just think that I'm going to find myself in some situation where I've burned through a bunch of TV or I've – like when I first moved to L.A. Burned through some bridges. Like I remember when I moved to L.A., I remember people just kept on talking about Entourage and it felt like a big cultural – hole for me. So I'm like, all right, so I watched like two or three seasons of Entourage. I never thought I'd be a guy just sitting around like BitTorrenting Entourage, but there I was. So I don't know. Have you seen any of Ballers, by the way, or heard anything? I heard it's actually kind of a good show.
And by the way, if you're a Ballers fan, no danger of any spoilers.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen the show. So this is a safe space. This is a Ballers spoiler-free zone. But I have heard people say it, but no offense, it's been people that don't actually like understand or watch sports. And my concern around the show has been it not unlike the movie Jerry Maguire. Like I feel like or even the movie Silver Linings Playbook, which has a heavy undercurrent of sports betting, but it's sports betting written about by people who don't sports bet. I have a feeling that if I watch Ballers, I'm going to be disappointed at these kind of fakey, like that the sport part of it is going to be unrealistic to me, which is a weird reason to not watch. I love Rob Corddry. And I actually kind of have a soft spot for The Rock. So
hell yeah.
I guess, you know what I think, Andrew? I think when I saw the previews for it, I thought this is Entourage about sports. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like Entourage about mm-hmm. Entourage.
Yeah, no.
So, and I know nothing about being in an Entourage. I don't know how many Lamborghinis a turtle would get or whatever. So if it's Entourage about a topic that I do think I know something about, I was expecting disappointment. But I would love it if you would watch it and let me know, because I need to get some media packed into my computer for our big flight to Australia, by the way.
Right, right. Well, I think there are other things I need to do first. I think I want to watch the – I love that I still have not even talked anything about Thrones, which is the point of this segment. But mm-hmm. I am thinking I want to watch the second season.
Ballers, 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 ballers.
I think I want to watch the second season of Westworld first. Mm-hmm. I was really into the first season, and then I totally dropped the ball in the second season. And Genevieve says it's just as good. I think I just, you know – didn't have the patience to sit down and get back into that world. Also, Russian Doll. Everybody's talking about Russian Doll. I haven't seen that at all. Like, those are two very binge-worthy things that I hear. Each episode kind of ends on a cliffhanger. And for me, that's the perfect kind of thing on an airplane. It makes the time go by real fast.
Yeah, I'm already nervous about – I love how much we're not talking about Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I actually love – I genuinely love how much we're not talking about the ostensible topic right now. I'm nervous about – I'm nervous about something that's going to happen this summer related to the TV show Russian Doll, which is everybody's talking about – everybody loves Natasha Lyonne. I think Natasha Lyonne is a very fascinating person. And but I watched the first two episodes of the show, and there is like Natasha Lyonne's – I don't want to say shtick, but like Natasha Lyonne's kind of – I don't know where in New York the accent's supposed to be from, this kind of brassy like thing going on. It doesn't really work for me. Now, Natasha Lyonne as the person has been through a ton in her life, and I find her, again, fascinating as a person and as an artist. But Russian Doll just kind of doesn't work for me, even though everyone's obsessed with it. But there's a possibility we're going to cross paths with Natasha Lyonne this summer, because she is going to be at Thing, where we are doing TBTL, Andrew. And – oh, by the way, where you know what my other gig's going to be at Thing? I'm moderating the Napoleon Dynamite panel.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to – yeah, they just asked me to do this. So it'll be – I'm going to be on stage with Napoleon, Uncle Rico, and Pedro, which is – I mean, honestly, like, that's going to slightly explode my mind. But we are going to – there's a small chance we would bump into Natasha Lyonne. And I know what's going to happen. I am going to feel the need to tell her – love Russian Doll, because I will want her to like me in the moment when actually it's – I think it's a cool show. I think it's a cool idea. Maybe I need to watch more of it, but it's not something that totally speaks to me, and I know – I already know that I will – if given the chance, I will lie and I will sell out my own beliefs so that Natasha Lyonne has a mildly positive thought about a person who she will never remember.
I am going to – so far, still no Game of Thrones talk. I am about to enter a conversation with you that I really do not know if this is appropriate for the air or not. But my gut says this might actually be interesting, but this might also be a real moment, because I was thinking about you a lot this weekend because I'm a little anxious to tell you something. Now, it's not a – I don't think it's a big deal. No, it's not – you know, it's not a huge deal. But this is one of those things where I sort of feel like – a life decision that I might have to make might bum you out, even though maybe logically it shouldn't. And that is, I made a mistake when it came to finding lodging for the Thing Festival. And you and I are going to be doing our podcast there, this podcast, as a matter of fact, on Saturday, correct? We are a Saturday. We're on the Saturday lineup.
We're Saturday.
And I don't know specifically where that fits in. I assume we're headlining the entire festival, meaning we'd be on probably around midnight.
Yes.
No. You know, I'm sure it'll be – obviously it'll be an earlier kind of situation. And the closest we can find lodging now – because obviously Port Townsend is a small place. I should have gotten on this forever ago, but I didn't. So the closest lodging is about 45 minutes away. And you and I are also, I think, flying out to the Midwest the next day. And I'm like, well, I can, enjoy as much of the concert as I can, the non-TBTL stuff. I'll try to enjoy the TBTL stuff as well. But, you know, I'll stick around for a little bit and try to enjoy it as much as possible. And then, like, I guess we can close out the show and then get in a car and drive 45 minutes and then have to, you know, make the trip all the way back to Seattle the next day and then get on, make my way to SeaTac Airport. But part of me is sort of thinking, well, if I have to drive 45 minutes after this festival, why not just make it 2 hours and come all the way back home and, you know, head to SeaTac on Sunday morning just from my house here? But somehow I've been worried that if I tell you that I'm just going to go to the Thing Festival, basically do TBTL, maybe watch a show or two, and then get out of there, it will disappoint you because I'm not kind of in for the whole experience.
I am not disappointed in you, okay, my friend. Also, don't beat yourself up over the lodging thing. It's kind of like, you know, we only found out about that we were going to do this like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or a month ago. So there, and I think that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a challenge about the whole thing. Is, you know, Port Townsend's not a huge town, and then you got a bunch of people descending on it. So I don't think you screwed this up. And also, it's just kind of one of those things where, honestly, I'm excited to do it, but there will be a certain mercenary element to it for us. If we got to get in there, we're going to do the show. We'll hopefully do a good job. But then we do have to be in Minnesota, you know, on Monday. Although I might end up having – because the thing I'm doing with the Napoleon Dynamite people is like really late on Sunday. So I might have to do a red eye or a really early flight on Monday. But anyway, I didn't – you know what? Honestly, I feel silly because I relate so much stuff back to this in my life now. And I feel like it's really broken record-y. But I swear to God, not drinking – It totally changes my opinion of these things. Were I still drinking, I think you're thinking of like Sasquatch, which we've done stuff before there. We've been there together. This idea of like 3 days of rolling thunder, and I'm going to just be like backstage drinking free alcohol and just kind of in a fog of fun for 3 days. And it's all part of this thing. Oh, thing is such a weird thing to name your festival because it comes up constantly when you're trying to describe stuff.
Or it's the perfect thing to name your festival because
thing,
people are
see,
saying it
you
all
just
the time.
Said it. You didn't even realize it. And we have to pay them fee every time we use the word.
I didn't know.
For me, yeah, it's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, like, this is going to be fun. I'm excited to do it, but I go into a lot of things like this. God damn it. I go into a lot of stuff like this with a different mindset now. And I don't know if it's more, it's probably less fun, but it's even like, okay, for instance, I was hanging out with you and Vives and Camaro Kev on Saturday night. And I rolled up and it was, we met at the Eagles, where I apparently was should not have been allowed in because technically it had closed, but Camaro Kev came and let me in.
So we hung out there.
I don't want to get you, I don't want to wind you up on that. Yeah. But anyway, I came out and met you guys, and we had a fun time, and then we went to Teddy's, and we continued our conversation, and it was just a wonderful. I mean, I was probably with you guys for like 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half. I had such a nice time. But then it was time for me to go home and go to sleep. We'll go back to my hotel room and go to sleep because I had a bunch of stuff to do the next day. And it's sort of like that would have never happened in my drinking days. I would have shut that place down with you, and then I would have dragged probably Vives and Camaro Kev to the next location and then the next location and this. And I kind of was like, oh, man, am I being unfun that at 12:30 or 1 in the morning I'm like, well, time for me to go. Everybody, of course, was like, cool, have a great night. Nobody cared. But my concept of myself as fun guy is changing. And I wonder – like I think – here's what I'm really trying to say. I think I overestimated how much people wanted me to be driving the party. Like a friend of mine, I don't think he'd be embarrassed if I said this, who lives in Port Townsend, my friend Josh. When he found out that I stopped drinking, he and I had had some pretty epic nights, and he was like, dude, I'm pretty relieved. He was like, I couldn't really keep up with that. And it was like stressful to him to know that if Burbs was coming back to town, it was going to be Rolling Thunder. So I guess that's a long-winded and very, very narcissistic way of saying no, I'm not going to be mad if you have to just dip in and dip out. And like, I'm looking forward to this festival. I'm really excited to have a fun time, but it just, I don't know. I basically used to want to be in this weird altered state the whole time, and I wanted as many people as possible to be with me in this altered state for as long as possible. And it's kind of weirdly liberating to be like, hey, people get to be in whatever state for however long they want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. You're fired, obviously, because you have not prioritized the show. I deserve that. No, it was a weird thing, and honestly, it was. Everything that you just said kind of went through my head, sort of, as I was thinking this through. And it was a weird thing to be thinking like, well, I might just have to treat this like a work event where I just go in, like you said, dip in, do my role, and dip out. And maybe part of me is just disappointed in myself. Like, here's a situation where, you know, I'm just looking at Saturday alone. The people that we're there with are, you know, people from De La Soul to Parquet Courts. I mean, you know, some of my favorite, some of them literally my favorite people.
It's literally the best music festival lineup I've ever seen in my life, honestly. It's, maybe it just happens to just land on my kind of taste and sensibility, but there's almost nobody on the bill that I don't want to go see.
Right. And so part of me, and I know that there are people around the country, I was thinking about our friend the Stewbot, who's like, you know, I think envious that he can't be a part of this thing too, or, you know, be at this thing. Because, I mean, this is one hell of a lineup, and it's so in my wheelhouse. And so maybe part of it is me being disappointed in myself that I'm not going to try to find some way to be more game so that I can watch this to the end and watch, I assume, De La Soul finish out the night. And part of me is also thinking, well, listen, if we weren't doing a show, I would look at this lineup and I would say, that is awesome. And then I wouldn't go because I haven't been to music festivals in a while. That's, you know, no, I'm not saying that any offense to the Thing Festival. This is awesome. It's just about me being older.
It's the Festival, by the way.
Oh, good. It's about me being older and me being a type of guy who likes to stay in his neighborhood and me being kind of a shut-in, I guess, but that would be the reality. But and I don't think I'd have tons of FOMO over it. I would just think, wow, that's a really cool show that I'm not going to. But I think maybe part of it is I will be there. I will have the opportunity to see all these things, but then I'll just be like, okay, bye, enjoy De La Soul. And maybe I'm trying to mask some of my own disappointment with myself under assuming that you might be like, dude, be here for this experience with me. So knowing that you don't feel that way, that like you're cool with me coming in, I don't know why I put so much of that on you, but I could sort of see a scenario where like,
because
hey, we're partners here. Yeah.
Yeah. And historically that is my thing. Like that is my stuff historically is just like the fact that I have moved through most of my adult life wanting to create an experience for myself. And also other people being part of that experience is pivotal to me getting the outcome that I'm looking for, whether it's going to Vegas, whether it's being on a cruise ship, whether it's whatever it is. And like that's, you know, I mean, it's you talk to my friends. Wait, have you been talking to my friends? Mm-hmm. What are they saying? Mm-hmm. If you were talking to my friends, I'm sure they would all share different experiences where there was some kind of a thing. God, damn it. You win again, Adam Zaks. Where there was some kind of an event or deal where I kind of wanted everybody, because I have said that it's something I've struggled with is kind of thinking of a lot of other people as being characters in the movie of my life. It's like, well, if I'm starring in this movie, I need all the supporting actors to do their lines and play their roles correctly for me. So it's like gathering everybody up to shoot the scene. And so I've done that a lot to people. And so I understand why some part of you would be like, ah, shit, is Luke going to be pissed because this isn't going to go the way he's expecting it to go? He has this expectation of a certain kind of 3 days of just like immersion in this. And also, you know what part of it probably is on some subconscious level is like even this Australia trip is a totally different thing for me and for us probably. Like we're flying across the world and we are just doing it for work. We are flying there. We are driving to the Lobster. We are staying overnight in the Lobster Motel. We are doing the show Monday morning, and then we are starting to drive. And then when we are done on Friday, we are getting up early the next morning and driving and then flying home. Like, there's no, like, party element to it. It's just work. And I think for a long time, this show has been kind of an excuse to party for me. And now it's just kind of become a thing where it's like, it is a job, and sometimes it isn't going to be fun, and that's okay. And I find that arriving at that point in my life to be kind of a relief. I'll give you one more quick example. and then we'll wrap up our Game of Thrones talk. What a ride, by the way. Game of Thrones, they left a water bottle in a scene. Anyway, this weekend, I already talked about how I had a lot going on. Well, I'll tell you something. And again, I feel like I'm in the, like, I'm leading this self-congratulatory parade for myself that's got to be off-putting to the listeners. But, like, I had these two events, and I was in Seattle, and, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, however long it's been, it would have been just – I would have been out wilding out the whole time, and I would have been miserable. I would have done a less good job, despite my inappropriate jokes. I would have done a less good job at these events, and I would have actually kind of hated doing them. I would have been sitting backstage just, like, miserable, hungover, and, like, why – you know, why am I doing this? Ugh, this sucks. Instead, I actually really enjoyed both things, and I felt good. And I was like, I'm getting a lot done here. Like, between Livewire, KUOW stuff, your stuff and my stuff, working on this CBS Sunday Morning piece, and doing these two events, I felt completely up to the task of doing all of those things over the course of 4 days. And for a long time, it would have just been a baton death march for me, because I would have been battling a lot of hanging, a lot of being hungover, a lot of late night activities. And I guess my point is that, like, I'm very encouraged by my newfound ability to do a lot of things and not hate doing a lot of things. And so it extends even to things like a music festival. Like, yeah, we're going to do this festival. It's going to be really cool. But then we do have to go to Minnesota, where I have to do Livewire from a hotel room on Monday night. It's like, and I can do all of that. And part of it is not having everything be about an excuse to get to the partying, I guess, is mm-hmm. what I'm really trying to say. Mm-hmm. And what I'm really, really trying to say is I am not going to be mad at you if you have to dip in and dip out. But what I do think you should consider is, first of all, Viv's opinion on this matter. And second of all, 45 minutes is not 2 hours, and it might be – I don't know. I'm just saying, don't do anything based on what you think I'm going to – my reaction is going to be, but I do think you may be bummed out if you don't get to stick around at least through Saturday. Maybe you just don't come back on Sunday. Maybe Saturday night you just go crash somewhere at a fun Airbnb that's even 45 minutes away, and then you do your thing on Sunday. Because there are night flights on Sunday, and so you could always leave at 5 o'clock. Since I have the Alaska Airlines schedule memorized, you could always leave at 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Are you saying that I should fly by night away from here? Is that what you're saying?
I know. You're leaving it in the clear.
Is that a real song?
Isn't that?
I was trying to really leave that in the clear for Lynn.
Hold on. Hold on.
What's that? Is that Ozzy? Is that Ozzy?
No, it's Rush.
Ooh, that's not a bad Geddy Lee. How did his voice get so high, though? Hey,
I wonder if he talks
that's
like
not
a
bad Geddy
guy.
Lee, dude. That would have been my second guess.
Let's just hear it. I'm not a Rush guy. I do want to talk about where I watched Game of Thrones yesterday, though, because it was awesome.
I'm kind of feeling this.
Is there any chance they begin with the famous line, or do we have to wait for the hook?
There's no chance that this music even...
What's that?
Keep going. Good.
Yeah, no.
Paid off.
Can you tell that I was actually singing that? That was a karaoke version
yes.
of the song. I was just doing Geddy Lee over top of it.
And by the way, Andrew, really not bad. That's a Geddy Lee's voice, famously high.
That's right.
And you did a good job. I mean, like, again, I guessed Ozzy first.
Mm-hmm.
But Geddy Lee would have been right there. And this is a perfect segue back into Game of Thrones talk. I could see Geddy Lee being like the fourth White Walker.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
You know, if you dyed Geddy Lee's mm-hmm. hair white, I could see him standing like two over from the Night King.
Yep, yep. A little gaunt. I actually don't know what – I actually do not know what he looks like. But
gaunt.
I just,
yeah, gaunt would describe him. Gaunt, long hair and like –
I'm looking at glasses. Yeah, right. I know this guy.
Glasses that he often wears, like those kind of small square-ish glasses that are actually very popular with the like Kanye West set. Mm. They brought those back. Terrible look, by the way. I don't know why that came back in fashion, but yeah, Geddy Lee could totally be a White Walker. Which brings us back, Andrew, to Game of Thrones.
Geddy Lee's a famous backpack rocker. Sorry, I just wanted to make
really?
Do you remember when Kanye was new, he was like the backpack rapper? Him and like Common, they're wearing their backpacks all the time. It was a really bad joke.
I remember hearing that, actually, and I had totally forgotten about that, that was a kind of considered a genre. Common was considered a backpack?
I think so. I think now we're really on the edge of it, but I think for a while it was kind of a Chicago thing, or it started out of Chicago, and it was kind of this almost like nerdy, nerdy little look, and it was right as Kanye was kind of like really coming up with his first album or something. I'm sure I'm getting some of that stuff wrong. But
you have more power at your fingertips than entire generations that came before you.
And you keep it in this backpack.
That's right. Okay.
Nice. Anyway. Okay. You watched Game of Thrones in a movie theater.
I did.
But like some kind of exclusive. This was not for the public. This was only for very important podcasters.
Exactly.
How did this all go down?
As a matter of fact, if I miss – I'm not even joking. If I miss out, or if I'm feeling bummed because I miss out on some Thing Festival stuff, I'll remember that. You know what? I did get to watch the final Game of Thrones in a movie theater. Actually, a theater that also has a screen, and it's Tacoma Little Theater. I was embarrassed because I hadn't prepared my the emails I was going to read on the air last week, and so I was reading them on the fly, if you'll recall. And I had said on a previous episode, I'm surprised that Game of Thrones or HBO isn't simulcasting Game of Thrones in theaters around the country because people would go to that. And then I got an email from somebody saying, we do that at our theater. And I was reading it out loud when I realized, oh, it's not a public showing. This is just a friend of the show, a listener who is inviting me and Genevieve to come watch it with him and in a small gang of people. And it's Tacoma Little Theater, and it's listener Chris. And I am so, so glad things worked out the way they worked out. Because, again, I am a type of person who we'll look at an invite like that and say, oh, that looks fun. Tacoma's about an hour away. I'll probably just stay home and watch it and like draw all the curtains and hope that the light coming from the beautiful sunny day outside doesn't glare off the TV. And I'll keep rewinding it because I'll be missing, you know, dialogue or whatever. That was old Andrew. I don't really know if there's a new Andrew, but the Andrew of this weekend.
Agree that old Andrew definitely would do that.
Definitely old Andrew would do that. You still may be talking to old Andrew, who made an exception. Mm-hmm. But Chris invited.
I don't think old Andrew would have sung Geddy Lee a cappella. So I do think we're turning a corner here.
Maybe. What if, though, this is a curse for you? What if the entire Australia road trip, you've just like pumped me up so much with confidence about my Geddy Lee that I am just going to be singing Rush a cappella the entire way from Cooper Petey to Larima. The first half, don't worry about, but the second half of the trip, that's all me. Anyway, we went down there, and man, am I glad we did. And we'll talk about the actual episode, obviously, in a little bit on the other podcast, but I feel like I was so much more generous. A lot of people are disappointed in last night's episode. And I will tell you this. I left the theater feeling great. I was like, what a great time. What a fun show. What a fun experience. It was wonderful. And it wasn't until much later at night that I started thinking about the show that I had just watched. I was like, wait, that's kind of really. And it wasn't until later that I started to criticize the show a little bit, because watching it in the theater was absolutely perfect. So thanks to Chris and thanks to the folks at Tacoma Little Theater, because it was really, really cool. I wish I could go back and watch the entire series in a theater. Yes, and that is me suggesting to Chris that he makes that happen for me.
Mm-hmm. I was, after I wrapped up my event in Seattle, I jumped in the car and raced home. Now, normal to watch Game of Thrones, normally, of course, I would, because I was, it has been so long since I have even gone to bed. Well, I guess actually on Saturday night I went to bed kind of on the later side because we were hanging out. But generally speaking, if it's post like 9 p.m., I'm starting to really look at the clock now. And so knowing that I was going to get home at about 11 and then, sorry, we have presumably a telemarketer calling right now, calling the home line. We are the last home in America that has a landline, and also I don't know how to turn it off, so that's happening in the background. But it was like kind of crazy for me to be getting home at 11 and then starting Game of Thrones, but I knew that I needed to, because like there is no way I was going to get through today without it being spoiled. because of just how, even driving home, I have this kind of dumb habit. I stop to get gas, and when you know,
that's
anytime
not dumb.
I don't know. Every time that I have like a moment where nothing entertaining is happening, I will just reflexively pick up my phone. So I'm sitting there, I'm gassing the car up, and of course it's like my habit to go to my phone, and I like click on Twitter, and it's just like immediately everything. I'm just seeing pictures of the characters and all this stuff, and I'm like, put it down. So I knew that I needed to actually watch it last night, or risk having it ruined, or just whatever. So I did, and I enjoyed it too, I have to say. Had the lights out. I was trying to get I was so happy because after a busy few days for me, I was lying there on the couch. I got some donut holes at that gas station because I like quality things, Andrew. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to eat some donut holes. I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. I'm done with a bunch of hard stuff. The dog is going to be sleeping on me. Like, and there was one beautiful moment where the opening credits were rolling. The dog had jumped up on top of the blanket that was on top of me. The cat came in and jumped up on top of the cat was sleeping on the blanket too. I had the cat and the dog and the donut holes and the meow, 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 mm-hmm. meow. And it was all coming together. And then the dog decided that she didn't like that, and she went outside to bark at a deer or something. But there was a beautiful moment, and I actually really enjoyed it too, even though I was not at a movie theater. Did they have snacks? Did they have movie theater snacks for you?
Did they have snacks? Yes. People brought a bunch of snacks. They had bought some pizzas. I felt terrible for arriving empty-handed. And then
terrible. Thanks for coming.
Yeah,
new podcast
right.
from 8 p.m.
Then they had some popcorn in the actual official popcorn
nice.
Maker. I was able to
so they
scoop
they did
my
they,
own.
They broke out the they cranked up the snack machinery
yes.
to some degree because it's like because movie theater snacks, as everybody listening knows, those are the best.
Yeah, I was now I assume that Chris is the only person at Tacoma Little Theater who listens to this, and I don't know what higher powers he answers to. I hope I'm not blowing up his spot. But, yeah, no, it was great. There was fresh popcorn.
He answers to the old
there.
Managers and the new managers.
that would explain the shrines and the fact that the tree outside the theater was weeping. So it was absolutely perfect. And I thought it was going to be I couldn't remember if people had said it was an hour and 20 minutes. Episode or a 120-minute episode, which is very different, but it must have been an hour and 20, right?
That 120
was,
minutes.
It was
well, actually,
two
you know
hours?
What? No, you know what? You're right. I think it has to do with how the DVR displays it. It was 1:20
okay,
something. So
yeah,
that would be
just
one hour and 20 minutes.
Gotcha.
Not 100. There was a colon that snuck in there, which
right.
changes. Yeah. It wasn't, that was the other thing. When I got home, because again, I old, and I'm like, boy, we're really pushing it tonight, Burbs. I was like, this could be a 3-hour episode. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like, they don't have to do any specific length. This is the series finale. They might have just gone nuts. I thought it was. I was going to make a joke to you that you didn't even care about on Saturday night, so you're not going to care about it tonight.
Huh?
I was going to say, it was crazy to me when they were sitting in the Red Keep and Don't Stop Believin' started playing. I thought that was a classic ending.
Oh, because of the Sopranos. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
I thought it'd be funny if like. If at some point, because, that's the last comparable kind of big TV event, And so
sure.
a lot of my thinking about, and this is now getting dangerously close to really legitimately talking about the plot of the show, but I was thinking about, well, how are they going to end this? And all the pressure just to like do it right, and then you're never going to do it right. And then I was reflecting on the Sopranos ending, and I was like, did they do it right? I think you might have said this at some point, but I actually think that ending holds up better over time. Like, I think I liked that ending more than I liked it when it happened. That's for sure. And I guess that's the mark of something good, right?
Yeah, I liked the ending. I think I liked it at the time. I'm really struggling with that because I can't remember if I was caught up with the show when it ended. I think I was. I know I started the show way behind everybody, and then Vives and I did this thing where we watch a bunch of one television show all at once to try to catch up with it. We call it binging in our house. And I remember that. And so I think I did. I think I have a memory of like getting excited. The last episode was on. I think it was just me and Vives watching it. And then I do remember a lot of people being very disappointed. I remember in the moment being like kind of shocked when it went to black, but it really made me think for a long time. Like I and you know me, this is where I like things to be slightly more avant-garde. I don't like things to always have a perfect little bow on them at the end. And I've always felt that way. I remember being a kid talking about books that way, or like a young man in like high school or whatever. I remember can't remember the details, but I believe I loved a Ernest Hemingway book that sort of just seemed like you turn the page and you're like, wait, what? that's where we're gonna end that? And that really, that works for me, because then my brain keeps going after I get done reading it, and my brain's trying to kind of figure out the rest. So I've always been a fan of The Sopranos ending. I think you were a little bit, not all that long ago, again, this is perfect for our Game of Thrones talk, you were a little disappointed recently rewatching some just like kind of mid-series episodes of The Sopranos when it was on. Have you gone back to that well at all? Because you might have just a couple of clunkers. Because
I think I saw an AJ. I think I saw. Here's the thing. I think the kids on The Sopranos, not Meadow as much, but I think AJ was not great at acting.
Yeah.
The character, or rather the actor who played AJ. And I think that the other kids, like, it was an AJ heavy scene where AJ is going through it at school, which meant a lot of kid acting. And I did not think that the kids were good.
Yeah.
So that was part of the problem. I mean, look, anytime you got Tony and Junior talking to each other, or Carmella involved, or Tony's sister, like you can't go wrong with that stuff. I think I just saw it. I just happened to see an episode that was heavy on the stuff that I didn't think worked very well.
Yeah, and AJ's a tough character. Like Tony's sister, whose name did you just say it, or did you just refer to him?
No, because I couldn't remember off the top of my head. Janice.
Janice. Yeah, nice. She is a character that is really hard to watch because she's so despicable in so many ways, but she's so well written and the actress does such a damn good job. And so that's a tough character in that regard. But then the AJ stuff, like AJ also not supposed to be super likable, I think. But then, like you said, I don't want to beat up on the actor. I don't know what his name is, but like not the best performance of it. So I feel like the AJ character especially suffers from being a character that I don't think we're really supposed to like that much, and not exactly being delivered in the deftest of hands.
Yeah. I'm not anti Sopranos, but I do think, look, it's just anything that was made 20 years ago is going to suffer from just some things that don't hold up. I think it's very, very hard to make something that is, you can look back years and years later and say, I wouldn't change any bit of this. So I think
Bewitched.
It kind of suffers from that.
Bewitched.
Yes. As which Darren, though. First Darren, second Darren.
Loved what they did with it. Loved splitting it up like that. Thought it was a genius decision. Wouldn't choose one over the other. Luke, I've said it a million times. I got five fingers, so I'm not going to cut any of them off.
You have said that a million times, and I wish you wouldn't have. Don't stop bewitching. That's how they ended that. That's how they ended that show. Do we have a show title? Did we?
We can wrap it up.
Finally
now.
Done.
We got there.
Something worthwhile in this hour and 8 minutes or whatever we've been at this. Okay, good. Glad to know it.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
Do we have any emails? I feel I have a vague memory of us having something we were supposed to announce. Was it?
Oh, was it, I think we
last week we were supposed to talk about doing our appearance in Australia. Doing our meet and greet.
Talk about handling things deftly. I think we already made that announcement, which was, I don't know.
Right.
I think we're going to be in Kingston, Southeast.
My question is, did anybody email us?
Oh.
Did we hear from any Australians saying, we'll see you in the Shadow of the Lobster, or we'll see you in Darwin?
I did get an email. The subject line was, we'll see you in the Shadow of the Lobster, but it scared me. So I just screamed and deleted it very quickly. No, I haven't heard from anybody yet. So those folks who were emailing us asking about that, I know that we were a little bit vague about it. As Luke said, anywhere we're stopping along the way, and we've made our itinerary public and I can share it again, you're welcome to join us. But I think most of our listeners are nowhere near the majority of places we're
stopping. They're in the major metropolitan cities of Australia, which unfortunately we are completely avoiding. The look of disappointment on the face – I've been telling everybody about this trip. Mm-hmm. The look of disappointment on the faces of people when they hear that we're not going to Sydney, mm-hmm. not going to Melbourne, not going to any of the places they've heard of or been to in Australia. And when I tell them, well, no, but we're going to be in Coober Pedy, mm-hmm. most people are like – confused and disappointed in this itinerary. Hey, let me just quickly mention, I'm very excited. I want to thank wonderful TBTL sponsor Everlane for helping me out. I'm going to wear a uniform this trip, Andrew. I was on the Everlane website because we love them. They're a sponsor of the show. And I was like, if I got to get some new clothes, I might as well get them from our sponsor because I like the stuff. And I figured out they got this new T-shirt that I thought would be good for it. I was Googling the temperature in Australia, where we're going to be. I was trying to figure out the, you know, like, is it going to be cold? Is it going to be hot? Well, the answer is it could be cold or it could be hot because we're right on the kind of shoulder of the fall into winter there, like between fall and winter. But anyway, I basically am going to wear this T-shirt from Everlane. I'm going to wear this fleece that they're sending me. I am going to be wearing underwear from Everlane. I am fully kitted out in Everlane for this trip.
Does Everlane really sell underwear? Or are you just spoofing
yes.
on that? Oh, I didn't know that.
No, I'm wearing Everlane underwear. It's not a joke.
Nice. I didn't know they made them.
Yeah, so I'm like, I feel honest, sadly, I feel that's a relief to me that I just know that I'm going to put on this black T-shirt every day. I'm going to put on these jeans every day. I'm going to put on this little fleece if it's cold. And if it's warm, I will take the fleece off, Andrew. That's how that works. And then I'm just going to be like, I have that figured out. I'm getting like five of the same T-shirt. I'm getting like all the stuff so that I just don't even have to think about it. What are your clothing plans for the trip?
I am going with the major competitor of Everlane. No, I don't.
Neverlane?
I was trying to even think. I don't know. What's the...
What would Neverlane... Neverlane is the makers of Zubas and Mambo Sock. I don't know if you've... They're those, like, drop crotch pants that you would see NFL players and pro wrestlers wearing in the late 80s. And the Mambo Sock was that weird sock that you would wear on your head. It had a drawstring on it, and you would tighten that thing up. That all courtesy of Never TBTL sponsor Neverlane.
I'm going all Bon Marché. They are not a sponsor of the show right now, but I'm hoping they will be if they ever. I assume that they're not in business anymore, Bon Marché. I didn't even know about Bon Marché until I moved here.
Yeah, that's a solid Northwest reference for a guy who didn't grow up in the Northwest. That'd be like me dropping a WMMS reference or you know, a Farmer's Daughter reference when I was in when I was in Cleveland.
Right.
Hey, speaking of which, I've heard you've got an update on that front.
I do, but first I need to play. I did not know of Bon Marché until I moved here, and people started sending us this commercial. And after these messages,
This Monday only, go to the Bon Marché for big, big savings for back to school and more. Like 30% on girls and Mrs. Denim jeans, 25% on young men's Shah Safari cotton shirts and junior denim jeans and
Shah
knit tops, and 20% on Levi's for men denim jeans and Dockers. So come on in and save the whole day. One day sale,
Monday only at the Bon Marché.
One day only at the Bon Marché. That was Geddy Lee. I know about Bon Marché. And then you mentioned it on the show the other day, and I think that's why it was in my brain. But my travel plans is to – I think I'm going to wear – I was going to experiment with something that also may have an impact on you, which is, as you know, my uniform for years that I've always worn is like a button-down shirt, left untucked, and I always have a T-shirt on underneath it, either thin white Hanes T-shirt. Often something maybe a little bit more fun than that, just like a Browns T-shirt I like or whatever.
Cleveland Browns, typically.
Exactly, that nobody ever sees, but I'm just wearing it underneath because I just feel like, I don't know if I'm sweating, it'll catch the sweat. I don't know. I've just always done that for literally the past 20, 25 years. And lately, though, I've been experimenting with losing the T-shirt underneath. I think for me also it came from a place of insecurity. Explicit. Of just like if my belly ever like accidentally shows in public, it's just like that's... I don't know. It's just like a major fear.
I have written on Twitter that the longest How did I even write this? There is not a longer period of time than the moment between when you're pulling off an overshirt and your undershirt comes up in public, and you can and the time when you can then pull the t-shirt down. I've had that happen like in an airport or something. You're just wearing, you know, something. It's too warm. You take off the sweatshirt or whatever, and it pulls your undershirt up. And it's probably a tenth of a second, but it feels like a lifetime.
Yes, and that is what I've avoided my entire life, which is why I try never to disrobe at all in public. But anyway, recently I have been foregoing, in some cases, the t-shirt below my other shirt. And I also have a short-sleeved, oversized shirt. It's like a snap-down shirt, kind of country western style, about a size or two too big for me. It's part of my Tonight shirt set. You know, I have my Tonight pants. Mm-hmm. I got my Tonight shoes. Literally, I have everything except for specific Tonight socks and underwear. Those are all interchangeable. And so I am actually thinking it's going to be really hot during the days, and maybe I just
wear
that. Well,
I don't know if it's going to be.
You don't think so? You don't think it'll be 70s at least? I mean, that's kind of hot for me, I guess. Maybe not really hot.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, so I'm thinking about that, but then if I'm wearing this same shirt day in and day out, and it's a loose-fitting shirt, which is why I like it, but I'm not wearing a t-shirt underneath, is that going to cause, you know, olfactory problems later on in the trip? I'm not sure. But I do think I will be re-wearing a lot of the same clothes, because it's like we're not really performing anywhere. We don't have to. It's really freeing. Even the Austin trip, which is the Australia of the South, you know, we had to pack knowing that, well, eventually when we get there, we're going to have to spiff up a little bit for a live show or be presentable. There's nobody I need to be presentable for from the moment we leave my house Friday evening heading into Australia. So that's very freeing to me.
Can you do me a favor? I have a Australian Outback temperatures list here. The issue is, it's in Fahrenheit.
Or no, it's
and
in,
so I don't know.
Or it's in Celsius.
It's in Celsius.
Mean? Yeah.
It's in the one that I don't know. So can you do some conversion
for
me?
Yeah, yeah. So you'll give me the temperature, okay.
So we're kind of – the thing is, we're doing this the last week of May, which is almost June. So the average daily maximum temperature in May in the Outback is 23 degrees Celsius, which means what? The average daily max in May would be?
I'm getting around 73 degrees Fahrenheit.
So okay, that would mean also
you're saying. Okay,
that's the hottest. And then in June, it actually, which we're gonna,
oh yeah,
again, we'll be at the end of May, early June. It drops down to 19.7 degrees Celsius as the max. So that would be 70, I guess.
60.
Although 73 is not nothing.
66 for 19 degrees. Yeah.
Well, how could it be that different? How could it go from 73? I really don't understand how these temperatures work. Okay, and then the average night minimum, okay, in May is 7.7 Celsius. What is 7.7 Celsius?
45 degrees.
Okay, 45 degrees. And then it drops down to, in June, the average nightly minimum can be 4.9 Celsius.
40 degrees, 41 degrees if we're rounding.
So I think we can say that it'll be in the mid-40s to possibly as high as the mid-70s, unless there's a heat wave. That's the thing, Andrew. These are just averages. Like, you never know. We had here in the Northwest a week ago or so, we had like – it was in the high 70s, which it had literally never been since they started keeping track of things. Mm-hmm. So we might catch a hot, hot week.
Yeah, and I was kind of hoping it would be a little. I mean, no, I shouldn't say that. Like, I think that we're actually very lucky with this weather so far, assuming that it sticks to around these things. Since we don't want it to be just like boiling hot, and we also don't want to like be cranking the air conditioner and possibly I don't know. The biggest fear we have right now, I think, is a breakdown. So the less stress we have to put on the car, the better. I'm looking right now, by the way, Alice Springs temperature. It's early morning there right now, but it looks like today it's going to be up to about 81, and I Whoa. Believe that's Fahrenheit. That's the high, though. That's not the average. So,
right.
Okay.
Still, 81 is warm.
Yeah.
So you're going to go with help me remember.
I think
remember
a couple
exactly
of. I think I'm going to go with a couple of loose fitting shirts, but I'm tempted to maybe do without some of the t-shirts underneath that I would usually do. And the only concern there is if I do end up, and I don't think I'm a smelly person, by the way, despite the flies that needed to apparently feast on my on the RV seat in some of the last stretches of our trip.
I forgot about that.
That was humiliating. Is that what mortified means? Anyway, I don't think I'm a very smelly person, so I think it's all going to go well. And I think that I can probably just wear, you know, this same shirt most of the days and then, you know, take a couple of nicer shirts in case we need to step into a restaurant. You don't want to look like – I haven't shaved my beard in a while. I mean, I know that it's still not rugged Mountain Man yet, but I still have a few more
days. It looked more rugged on Saturday night than it has in a while. So it's starting to happen.
See, are you being serious? Because Genevieve she will not give me – if I just say to her, hey, Genevieve, does my beard look too long or is it getting bigger? She just looks at me and she looks away. She won't even entertain the question anymore. So thank you for having my beard back.
I noticed Saturday night that it looked more mountainous.
Nice.
Than I remember it.
That's great. All right, you set me up for this before. Well, to change gears here, we were talking about this misadventure I had in my youth as a high school student. There was a donut shop we hung out at all the time. Me and my friends, my friend Mary ran the place after hours, and I asked if I could spray paint something on the back of the building. She said yes. It was my first experience graffito tagging something. And I wrote my friend's band name, The Farmer's Daughters. And then I stepped back, and it was way, way, way bigger than I thought it was going to be. And it was a blight on North Olmsted, Ohio. It was a blight on the Mr. Donut. And it really impacted, I feel like, my friendship with Mary. I got a note from a listener in Cleveland that says, hey, guys, I had to run some errands in North Olmsted, so I swung by the Mr. Donut to see if the spray paint is still there. This would have been about 19. I want to say, can't remember if it was just before I graduated or just after, but let's just put this around 1995. Listener Jessica says, unfortunately, I see no Farmer's Daughters spray painted on the back. She sent a photo. I just didn't want you to worry about it in Australia. Now, here's the interesting thing. I say listener Jessica, but that's a really weird thing for me to say. This is Jessica. She's one of my high school pals. She somehow, through word of mouth, like my friend Uncle Paulie here told my friend Kara, who told Jessica, who's living in Ohio. And so Jessica is writing in. Jessica, who I have not spoken with in years and years and years, is now apparently listening to TBTL and getting. Now I'm concerned about all of the high school stories I tell, and we have at least one listener.
I knew right when you started.
None of this is true.
When you started to describe this to me, I knew exactly where we were going to end with this, which is more anxiety for you.
Sure, yeah.
Because now you're going to be running everything through the filter of there are even more people from your childhood and teenage years listening. And it's going to stress you out. New listener Jessica and old Andrew friend, thanks for doing that recon mission, but also no thanks for making Andrew feel even more inside his own head.
I mean, maybe there's an element of that, but in all sincerity, no, I am just so this seeing this email flipping delighted me today because I just saw, listener Jessica in Cleveland here, like, you know, just want to let you know I checked it out. And then she wrote a quick personal note. Hey, Andrew, I found out about the podcast through, you know, Kara. And I'm just like, Jessica? I just like, I totally did a Lucille in Arrested Development, like Jean Parmesan, only I was screaming Jessica at the top of my lungs. So I haven't heard from her in forever. I'm not on Facebook anymore, so I don't even know if she's active there or what's going on. But it's just so great to hear from people in all sincerity from the old days. So I was pretty psyched about that.
Sure. Jessica, more like, hell, Jessica.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
Want me to read another one here?
All right.
Just one.
Sure. We are now we're out of email music, which is always an indicator of something. Right. But
I'll just keep this really quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
This is regarding cybersecurity training that you and I had to take. We were delighted to. The company offered us the opportunity to re-up our cybersecurity vows, and it was really great because we learned some new stuff, and we were talking about that on the show on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your willingness to practice good judgment. We can't do it without you.
By the way, I did get a text from somebody inside the organization, somebody whom we used to work with who texted me on Friday and said, I usually don't like to say this to my colleagues, but I really enjoyed your show on Wednesday regarding the cybersecurity talk. So anyway, this email, though,
Carrie told me. Yeah. Carrie told me that there was a certain amount of pushback on the Facebook page about people saying kind of like, get over it. This is just what happens at jobs or something. And I would just say to that, I don't know the specific criticism, but to the degree that it was that was basically the gist of it. Like, I totally get that there are way more annoying things that happen in workplace environments. And I also understand that most of our listeners have to do all kinds of stuff like this. I would just say that it is a little different for us because of just the challenge in even accessing this stuff. Like, I've also had, like, when I was at NPR, I had to do these kinds of things when I literally had a desk there. I worked in LA, and it did not take up as much of my brain space because I could just do the thing where I watched it while I was sitting at my desk at work, and I could kind of do other things and check in with it. So I am, you know, I hear the annoyance, and I don't think it's totally wrong, but also, you know, that's an element of this for me.
I'm kind of surprised that people would say anything negative on the Facebook page, but I don't know. Maybe it's changing over there. Here's a note that we got from Stephanie, who says,
He's made snot come out of my nose.
I heard it's a real pleasant place. Stephanie says, I was listening to episode 2901 today, and I also got an email at the same time to do my Microsoft security training. And that training opened with Luke's voice. It's like my training is a weird episode of TBTL or a repeat of the episode I just listened to, except in this instance, Luke sounds like a security expert. Luke, you should get a waiver from APM since you essentially took the Microsoft training. Our training makes you constantly click to move forward, but they still let us speed up the audio to 2 times and the video to 4 times. Anyway, Stephanie says, well done, Luke. So that security training that you recorded is still out there, Luke.
I'm making more of it in June. I'm going back to Microsoft and doing 3 more days of it.
Yeah,
yeah, that's the other thing is I mentioned this before, but like here I am going on about how annoyed I am. We have to do this cybersecurity stuff, and I'm literally the person like on screen and voiceover making people do this at Microsoft. But I would honestly say, and I feel comfortable saying this because I get no credit for this, but the people that wrote, my friends Graham and Kurt, with an agency called GLG in Seattle, they wrote these things that are genuinely funny, like legit funny stuff, and then they also, you know, shot it in a really great way. So these, I would put these up against any other security video you have to watch. And again, none of that is because of me. So while I am part of one of these things, I actually think, number one, as a listener pointed out, I really have like had to sit down and talk to a lot of people about this topic. Maybe that's why I got 100 on the quiz, Andrew. Yeah. Maybe that my whole thing is actually skewed. This all seems so easy to me, but it's just because I've actually had to do a little background work on learning about it, like learning to not put a thumb drive into the computer that you find in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. It took me weeks of study to learn that concept. But no, I'm in one of these, so I don't want to seem super hypocritical, but I think they can be better than the one that we were subjected to.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me just throw out one last thing really quickly, if I could. I'm sorry. I had, I guess, a lot of coffee this morning or something. Or I still have a lot of donut holes in my system from last night.
Those sound so good.
Sugar rush.
One quick question on that. Were they white powder, the kind that almost tastes cold when you put them in the mouth? Oh, okay.
No. I go old fashioned. Here's the thing. My favorite kind of donut is old fashioned glazed. Mm. And that's what I was looking for in this gas station in Everett or wherever I was. But they didn't have those. But then they had donut holes that were made out of that glazed donut, which is the thing that I really like. But man, because they're like, I don't know if I would eat like 4 old fashioned glazed donuts in a sitting, but I will definitely eat 4 donuts worth of donut holes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
yes,
they're
I
like
know exactly
Tic-Tacs.
What you mean.
Like,
yep,
just they're so poppable. It's fair, and I knew it too. I bought this little container, and I was like, "I'm eating all of you tonight," even though it's you know, it's like a small family size amount of donut holes. And I was like, "No, you, me, Game of Thrones."
Let's not
it's
pretend.
Happening.
Let's not pretend like we don't know what's going on here. I'm not going to do that thing where I pretend like I'm going to eat half the bag. I'm going to put a chip clip on it and put it away, and then I'm going to go grab it again 15 minutes later. Like, let's just not lie to ourselves.
We are men of honor. Lies do not become us, as I often say. I've now forgotten what I was about to say, which is an indicator that probably wasn't that. No. It just lets you know that it probably wasn't that big of a deal. So I guess that brings us to the end of the program. Is that true?
Let me get the music. You mind if I get the music going over here?
I don't mind. I love it.
And then
I did suggest a show title.
You did. I wrote down, right? Don't Stop the Witching was one.
Okay.
I think there were others, but that's all I wrote down.
I like that. I mean, I don't usually like the things that I say, but I think that one's that kind of works. All right, cool. Listen, that's going to do it for the show today. Thank you so much for being part of TBTL. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. So we'll see you then. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Go Mariners. Go eat a donut hole. Hmm. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.